Welcome to the weekly online radio show, Your Sales Doctors. Each week we discuss success strategies to the current sales and sales management challenges we hear from our listeners and clients. If you would like a topic or a question discussed on our show, please go to www.yoursalesdoctors.com. And now, your hosts, Pat Sherlock and Bobby Welch.
Hi, everybody. This is Pat Sherlock, and I have Bobby Welch on the call with me.
Hey, Pat. Happy Monday again.
Again. Yeah, I know. Great to be with you again to talk about such an important topic this week is things managers do to kill teamwork. Well, I know the listeners will be excited about this topic because it's the age-old problem, especially between sales and ops. So what do you see with that? Since you had a long track record on the ops side, how do you see managers really killing the teamwork?
You know, it's a rich topic, and there's so many ways at it. You know, first, you know, I'd like to say that there doesn't seem to be middle ground on this topic. I've been on most of my teams, thank goodness, have nailed this and done a really good job on it. But then when it's missing in a really big way. So it's kind of like on a scale of 1 to 10, it just feels like either you're a 9 or a 10, or you're a 2 or a 3, and I don't see a lot of middle ground. And that might be a good place to start on what's going wrong inside the shops and the companies that can't boost this up to a 9 or a 10. And I'd say probably first off, just because this is where leadership should always look, is I don't know if the goals, in other words, the service goals and the quality goals in particular, and the vision on how the team is to work together, and at the end of the day, actually produce, I don't know if it's detailed enough to unify both sides, because both sides inherently have slightly different agendas, which are healthy, but finding that common ground that unites them and talking about that all the time, I don't see that.
Well, I agree with you 100%, which raises the next question that, and I think you've really already touched upon it, ops and sales, the agendas are different because the personalities in those types of positions are certainly much different. And they need to be because it's between the balance of having a good relationship between the risk end of it and the selling side of it has to be there. But I see that a lot of times the source of this issue is that, you know, ops thinks sales is paid too much, and then sales believes that they don't care about the customer. Is that what you see?
Yeah, that's a common theme. I believe that that's a false theme, and I know you don't believe it either. And that's really what that shows is when an environment is like that, you've got a couple things at play. Number one, you've got sales management that doesn't do a good job onboarding and recruiting their sales talent.
Right.
And what's missing from that onboarding is the idea that has to be very strongly presented up front that I don't pay you to fund loans. I pay you to fund good loans at a high level of service to our customers, and that's what you're getting paid for. That simple twist in the beginning when you're hiring somebody, nobody is going to discount that that's a requirement at the time they're being hired. However, in the heat of the moment when a loan is on fire and going sideways, you've lost your opportunity. That message doesn't resonate as well anymore. And then on the ops side, you've got an ops management team that doesn't do a good job at onboarding, describing what it's like to be, you know, or have 70% of your income or more be based off of your commission. And if you're an underwriter, for example, I would tell my underwriters all the time, hey, imagine you were in a conversation with me and the outcome of the conversation was going to affect 30% of your income this month. How passionately would you represent your case? And so in both camps, you need to work with management on how they screen, hire, and onboard, setting those really important, what would you call them, I guess, expectations and empathy points right up front.
That's actually, you know, a really great point. And a lot of times on the ops side, what I see when consulting is that sales, by not doing what you're suggesting with hiring really the right people, that what ends up happening, the ops side becomes the one that has to try to fix the problem that a poor originator might have generated. And I have to tell you, I've been seeing recent data on how many loan officers do like one loan a month. And under the one loan a month scenario, how on top of the requirements of what a good loan is, are you going to be? So on the sales side, the tolerance level for that type of salesperson is really many times the heart of the problem. Likewise, on the flip side, is the ops side certainly is left with probably an attitude of protecting the company, which it is, but sometimes they can not have the communication skills that you need to have when you're dealing with the sales force. One of the trend lines that I am seeing is that companies are looking at and hiring on the back office end of it a little slightly different person, someone that is an underwriter or a processor with communication skills. So I think companies are starting to recognize that you can't have ops and sales fighting all the time. Is that what you see?
No, absolutely. And you've got two really good points there. You know, one, the onesie-twosie. Yeah. Originators. Mm-hmm. And, you brought up, hey, they don't really understand their guidelines well enough, which means they're not qualifying and documenting the loans at the level that's needed. And that's certainly part of it, but extends beyond that as far as the frustration they create inside the system.
Right.
They never get to know the LOS really
right.
well.
Right.
They never get to know the other support structures in the company that are there to help them and who to call when.
Right.
Because at one loan a month, they're only doing 12 a year.
Right.
So they've only had 12 touch points in a full year of the company's overall infrastructure. So they're incapable of even leveraging all the great things that a company could have to support them in the infrastructure, even if they're trained about it up front, because we all
right.
know that, you know, after 30 days, we lose 90% of what we haven't used in a training.
Right.
So it doesn't matter, you know, because I've been in conversations with sales executives before. Well, you know, that if they were properly onboarded and they had the training they needed up front, then that wouldn't be a problem. Well, yes, it would, because we don't remember what we don't use at a very high level very quickly. And
right.
That's something you'll never solve unless you attack the volume. Lift volume, solve problem. All the other ways that I've seen people try to solve around it, it doesn't work. The other thing you brought up that I thought was pretty interesting is the situation that an ops team is put in when poor, and then I actually want to flip the tables, so remind me, because I want to flip the tables what ops is doing mm-hmm. to really stress sales out, because I wanted this to be an even conversation. But again, the issue runs a lot deeper than just a marginal loan that maybe doesn't fit the loan parameters, kind of bumping up against underwriting mm-hmm. and getting delayed and overconditioned. That, again, a problem you see a lot. But I'll tell you what's a bigger issue inside the process is the number of exceptions and rushes
right.
that are created. Because the mortgage process is like a baton race. And in order to win the race, every participant has got to be running full tilt at the
right.
time that they pass the baton. The person that the baton is being passed to has got to start running and be in some good motion before the baton is passed to them.
Mm-hmm.
And that pass off has got to be a strong connection so nothing is dropped in between.
Right.
And rushes, excessive rushes, and I, through years and years of looking at it, anytime you've got somebody or a branch above 20, 25%, if you're being generous, of their loans requiring rushes through either department, that's a sign of a problem.
Right.
And anytime you're running off of exceptions, you know, waive this through closing, I'll get it later. All of that, when you see it to excess, is a sign of a systemic issue that you need to solve. And if you don't solve it, you're going to burn out your ops people. You're going to actually end up with quality issues, because you can't throw unlimited hot torpedoes over the fence and expect the other team member to catch it 100% of the time. At some point, it's going to be dropped at the cost of quality or a missed closing. And those are the things that every company needs to measure and then include as part of their regular performance reviews with everyone along the line, you know, from sales all the way through underwriting, all right,
yeah.
closing. And
mm-hmm. Yeah, they're all great points. And the one thing that I've done in consulting, although it's probably not that popular, but I just see over and over again, not an understanding of the product guidelines. And it is kind of your tool to be successful in this industry. And one of the things that sales managers should really incorporate is that they are testing the knowledge on these guidelines. And in my view, once you start doing that, then the sales side will get the message. And likewise, the underwriting side will get the message that knowing our tools, which is the product guidelines, is just a basic in our business. And so often, it's one thing if it's gray areas, but a lot of the black and white isn't really known. And I just think when we look at it, granted, the guidelines are long and whatever, but that is what you need to know.
Yeah. And it's interesting, too, because I've watched as companies, you know, when I first got started in the business too long ago to talk about, I had to learn my guidelines, and then my manager was the point of contact. If I had a question, I'd walk into Linda's office.
Right.
And she would coach me and teach me and be my mentor in that. Now, companies have moved that into many of them into corporate settings with deal desks and other things right. removed from the branch to get your answers from. And they don't even filter them through the branch. So what's happening is training and reinforcement is not happening enough. And now, you know, Linda would, in her sales meeting, she would cover a product very regularly. And it was in her best interest to do that because it reduced the number of questions she's getting. Well, now because that's been pushed into a corporate support role, the other best practices that kept those questions at play are also eroding. So the we've kind of left a lot of things that worked in the past, and we've done it. The big elephant in the room is that we've done it because companies have become, in their minds, loan officer centric, and they're trying to compete maybe in areas that they shouldn't be competing for in order to attract their loan officers.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's the age-old problem. I mean, it's another topic for another, you know, radio show, because it is the issue that installing standards of and knowledge standpoints of understanding your guidelines, I think you hit the nail on the head that the managers are afraid to require that because they're afraid the person will go to another company. But at the end of the day, I really do think that it is a basics. And if you want ops and sales to be coordinated, you can't use ops as, you know, the in-house library for reading the guidelines. I mean, I do think you're putting a burden that shouldn't be there. But what do you think about, and I'd like to do it in a bigger picture, what I often see is the head of sales and the head of ops not getting along. And that yes. becomes the source, a lot of times, of the war between the groups.
Yes, yes, absolutely. And many times, and to be honest, I've been in that position too, personally, and I've, you know, sometimes mended that fence well, and other times I haven't. And I can tell you the times that I haven't, what was at play, what prevented me, even though I knew what was going on wasn't healthy, what prevented me from making it better was that the company actually wasn't even in line with the
right.
way things should work. And
right.
so I would go into meetings with my boss, and I would get a different set of directives, or at least a different flavor. And the projects and what I was held accountable to created friction with what the goals of the origination team were. And in the worst instance that this was all happening, we even planned our business plans each year separate from each other.
Right.
So the whole thing was so disjointed that without that unified vision, then, you know, playing nice is tougher because you truly have antagonistic goals that have been set for you. And that's harder to overcome, in my opinion, than personality conflicts. Just basic, you know, you don't like each other. That's easier to deal with than the constant stress of being held accountable in areas that they are not being held accountable with you for.
Right.
And so that's the missing component there most of the time, in my
right.
opinion.
Yeah, I think people don't want to talk about it, but certainly the best thing I would recommend our listeners is that the head of sales and the head of ops go off site and have a conversation with the executive team on
yes.
what the service agreements between each one of their business units are. It's such a basic, but I see that a lot as really what the source of why ops and sales isn't working. And it's you would think that they would do that just normally, but that isn't the case. And I'm sure that's what you've seen.
And in your service agreements, don't just include turn times.
No.
Because one of the things that I've been put in a difficult role of is, you know, where's the line in the sand for
right.
rushes? Where's the line in the sand for exceptions?
Right.
And at what point do you get management on either side to stand up to their own team and move
right.
forward? Because, you know, on the flip side, hey, if you're in underwriting, you're going to be looking at rush sets of conditions a couple times a day. It's just part of the job. It's what we do to close on time and to serve our borrowers. If you're in closing, you're going to work through some lunches to get a set of closing docs out on time. It's just part of the territory. It should be done, and it should be done with a smile on your face, and we should be happy to serve. And this is how we earn our business, and this is how we differentiate ourselves. But on the flip side, I should be able to get a lunch every now and then. And a certain percentage of my closings shouldn't be asked just a couple hours before they're due. Those type of things over time, they chill the relationship and they hurt quality. So you've got to get, you know, quality is good for sales because it results in faster approvals, reduces the number of trailing items that you're asking for a borrower, which makes you look like a schmuck, and it keeps your closings on time. Sales and favors and going the extra mile to meet a closing deadline, it's good for ops because it keeps us employed. So that common ground, being able to talk about the mutual interests where they meet, that's the key.
Right. Well, what are the three takeaways that you would like our audience listeners for this important topic of how to improve teamwork really between sales and ops? What would be the three that you would say?
Yeah, I would say that goals and vision for the both sides of the aisle need to be clearly defined and equal in accountability on both sides so that they're playing by the same set of rules and the same set of expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next step would be to clearly measure whatever metrics you need to so that you understand if those agreements are being held up on both sides, and meet regularly to discuss how those metrics are being met and how everything could be running better. And then the last one is then take that information and from the point of hire all the way through somebody's last day at your company, that needs to be a central theme of all of your meetings, of all of your performance evaluations, and becomes the unifying conversation across, again, both aisles.
Right. Well, they're all great points. And the one thing that I would like to leave as a takeaway, for those that may not have read a good book on it, the book called The Five Dysfunctions of a Team is actually an excellent book about a real life scenario of how do you get a team to work together. So again, the title is The Five Dysfunctions of a Team, and it's by Patrick Lencioni, so I would highly recommend it. Well, I want to thank Bobby for your comments today. They were great, and I want to thank everyone listening. Certainly, we love to hear questions from you because that's how we select the topics. Certainly go to www.yoursalesdoctors, and you'll see our contact information. We'd love to hear from you. So have a great sales week, and until the next episode.